thank you for joining us for another episode of Hacker Public Radio. I am Stank Dog, and I am joined this week by Josh Knapp and Bolts, two experts in the field of cloud computing. Although I'm not overselling you guys too much, calling you experts, but definitely know a whole lot more than me, so I am glad to have you on the show to ask you a bunch of questions. You guys ready to be grilled?
Always.
So, cloud computing is certainly a huge buzzword these days. You see and hear about it and read about it everywhere. But I have found that there's a whole lot of confusion, there's a lot of misconceptions, a lot of false allegations and worries and concerns out there, in my opinion anyway. So I've been doing a lot of research on it, and actually we'll talk about this later in the show, but we've actually made a switch to the cloud. But before we go there, let's kind of back up and let's talk about what is the cloud. I know I always start when I do these shows, whenever I talk about something, presentations, let's start, you know, let's begin at the beginning. Let's get everybody on the same page. What is the cloud? I've seen the commercials, so who owns this cloud? Is it Amazon, Apple, Microsoft, I think, has a cloud, Google? I mean, are they all, is this like they're all working together to make this one giant cloud that we all share? Is that how it works?
No, it's, everybody has a different cloud, and realistically, the definition of cloud, depending on who you speak to, is considerably different. I know some groups will go off and say that if it's virtualized, it's a cloud. I even know a guy who says all web hosting is cloud. It really depends on who you're talking to. A lot of people accuse Microsoft of thrashing the word cloud all over the place, including calling remote desktop a cloud service. And we're all like, wait a second, guys, that's remote desktop. But really, depending on who you're talking to, you're going to get a different answer. And in most cases, it's a form of something else that somebody already said. What we here believe cloud is a set of technologies, not just one technology, that allows you to have greater control over resources, giving you the ability to split a single server into multiple VMs or containers, depending on the hypervisor that you're using, and allow thin provisioning for services and data.
Well, we're going to come back and talk about hypervisors and some of those terms you just threw out. But let's back up a little bit and say, you know, shared resources is that's nothing new. We've been able to throw up a Linux box or a Unix box or anything and have multiple accounts, they're all sharing the hard drive. You just give this person a quota, that person a quota. What's different than that versus the cloud, which is another form of shared resources?
The ability to expand that shared resource. So if you are on a shared server, on a Linux server, and you've got 500 gigs of storage space, you're only allowed that 500 gigs until you have to add in another hard drive. In the basis of a cloud, you can add additional storage by attaching more virtual storage. You're not having to wait for the increase of physical storage on that system. You're able to add it on without having to bring down the system. Also, security is a big shift in the cloud. If one account on your Linux box were to be compromised to the point where a root level exploit could be executed, your entire server and everybody on that server would be compromised. In a cloud platform, you can isolate users to the point where if one account, one user, one virtual machine, one container gets exploited, you would only have to deal with that account, that virtual machine, because all the other ones are completely isolated from one another.
Well, and it's not just storage or hard drive space. It could be any hardware resource, more memory, more storage arrays, like you said, it could be any of those things can be expanded without taking the system down. Basically, it has that ability to be updated dynamically, correct?
Correct. So CPU, memory, storage, you can even go off and restrict the number or amount of CPU that an account can use. So say you've got somebody that you know, if given the ability, they would go off and run your clock cycles right through the roof. you can go off and say, you know what, we're only going to give them half the cores on this physical system, and we're going to throttle them so that if somebody else is running another batch project, this takes a back seat. So you have a lot more control over what a single user, a single account can take on a system without having to worry about it completely crashing the entire node.
Which sounds like that would be a huge benefit when one particular site, domain, VM, whatever you want to say, is being attacked by DDoS or anything else. You can limit and contain the damage done. It won't take down the rest of the cloud.
Right, and one of the or the other bit I did on this, I used cloud-based virtual machines to mitigate a DOS attack. So we're not talking about these things being weak. They're pretty beefy. So for people who are like, well, I don't want to get something that's gonna break or not be able to handle what I do, just to give you a kind of a standpoint on that, I got five virtual machines from different providers all around the world and used them to filter a DOS attack that was 7 gigs per second, I think. Yeah, it was a beastly attack, but using a mixture of round robin DNS and some programs that I've written, I was able to filter that traffic, and only clean traffic would pass through those virtual machines. So customers on the other side were up and running, and those virtual machines handled like a dream.
Now, did you talk about this in another episode of HBR?
I did. It's actually the first one I did was the DDoS, what it is and how to protect yourself from it.
So if you are listening to this one for the first time and want to hear a little bit more detail about that, you can go back and find that in the archives, hackerpublicradio.org. Always handy to go back and look these things up because we cover so many topics on the show that it's just, I love going back and listening to stuff or re-listening to stuff over and over again. So that's great that we have the ability to do that, especially now that we have a lot more storage thanks to the cloud. But we'll come back to that later too. Now, I got to tell you, I can't help but think back. You know, I'm kind of I'm an old dog these days, and I do remember many years ago the initial, I guess, talks or ideas of this starting to come up. I know one of the first attempts at, I don't know if you'd call it cloud, but there was something they tried to start or tried to create a trend called network computers, which was just a thin client is what they would call it. It was just having a computer on the front end that just had the basic hardware. It didn't even have storage or very minimal storage in it. And it kind of, I guess, outsourced, for lack of a better word, all of the operating system, all the applications, all the work that needed to be done over to a server to do all the work. This kind of reminds me, or it looks like it might have been the beginnings of not maybe not exactly cloud computing, but the software as a service aspect of cloud computing. The name cloud, and maybe correct me if I'm wrong, but I'm pretty sure that goes back to the old days when you would do a network diagram. When you're in a company or a university, you have a big network with lots of switches and all that, you do a nice big network diagram. They would always show the individual components, but then they would eventually show it leading off into a cloud icon, just a little way to illustrate that this connects out to some ethereal network somewhere or the interwebs itself. And that's where the cloud came in. It's trying to say, you know what, once it gets out there, the details aren't so important anymore to know exactly how many servers, how much memory, because it's all dynamic. Is that where the term cloud comes from, or?
The term cloud from back then, I guess, could really relate to the term cloud now, because back then it was just used when people didn't want to get into all the nuts and bolts that built that network. Now it's to try and explain cloud to, from any one perspective, to somebody who isn't intimately knowledgeable on the subject, it becomes a very difficult task. Because just in the little bit that I did earlier, I went over hypervisors, virtual machines, containers, dynamic storage, thin provisioning, all that kind of stuff makes what cloud is now today. What you're talking about with the thin client and the or dummy terminal and the mainframe is probably the earliest rendition of what is now becoming to be more common VDI, virtual desktop, which is actually something we're working on here to be able to present as a service for customers as well. That would probably be another episode entirely, just because of how wide of a range of topic that can reach. But it does focus on a lot of things that cloud uses, that scalable storage, the ability to thin provision users' accounts and make sure that they're isolated. Things like that become extremely important, especially now when you start talking about the security of the end user's data and who owns that data and what happens if one user's data is compromised or is accessible by another user. I personally wouldn't want any of our buddies to go off and see all my personal financial data. They may be my friends, but they don't need to see my bank records.
Sorry about that. Didn't mean to hack into that box. I didn't know that was your financial information. No, I'm just kidding. I'm trying to be careful. It could be dangerous. It could make a five-hour episode if we go down this road. But there are multiple types of cloud computing. There's a lot of different things that are referred to as cloud computing, and I kind of mentioned one, you touched on another. I mean, we're kind of focusing on what's called more of I'm trying to stay with general cloud computing ideas, but private cloud. But there are other things, like you said, the remote desktop, which could be argued that that's a type of cloud. I mean, that's the Microsoft. I know Oracle, Ellison from Oracle, he's been outspoken saying that they've been doing cloud for years. They just never called it cloud. It's the same thing, and it's just a buzzword. I mean, it's kind of a controversial phrase to just say that. A lot of places are starting to say they're cloud technologies when they're really just client server, but done in such a way to pretend or make it invisible. I mean, again, I guess this goes back to the cloud idea on the old network diagrams, and just to think, you hide everything behind a cloud. You put an icon, you say to the user or the person reading it, don't worry about what's going on behind the curtain.
Exactly.
You know, ignore the man behind the curtain. Now, is there anything inherently wrong with that? I mean, Microsoft commercials and Apple say, you know, it's got a little kid, it's in the cloud. You know, a child can use it. On one hand, I can certainly see that makes things easy for a user. There's really nothing wrong, I guess, with having someone else do that work for you, especially someone that's knowledgeable. It does allow a lot of people to do that without knowing so much about what they do. I mean, probably people who listen to this show are more appreciative and want to know the nuts and bolts of it.
Right.
But a lot of people don't. So I don't see if there's anything wrong with that. Do you?
I don't see a problem with it in the sense that, you know, saying, okay, it's in the cloud, don't worry about it. But there are people who are paid to worry about it. The
right.
People who are the CTOs, the people who have to make sure that their data is safe and secure, the people who are required to maintain PCI and SAS 70 and every other industry standard out there, you need to make sure that your data is safe. And it just becomes one of those things where you kind of have to take a deeper dive into what each individual is talking about when you start talking to companies and different things like that, what they see as cloud. Because, like I said, I talked to a guy last November, and he's like, well, isn't all web hosting cloud? And you hear that thought from a lot of people who aren't really knowledgeable in server side or what web hosting is or what service hosting or anything like that. So it really becomes one of those things where you have to understand who you're talking to and generate a uniform discussion as to what you guys believe cloud is. I've had to sit down with our sales department and say, okay, this is what we call cloud. Because you don't want to go off and compare apples and oranges. it becomes very ugly very quickly.
You kind of said something that I want to reemphasize or clear up what I was, because you said it a little bit better. What I was trying to allude to is, you know, as again, this is Hacker Public Radio, and speaking from a hacker standpoint, I don't really trust anybody. You know, very few people, and those that I do, you only trust them to a certain extent, and that's a very, very important thing that you said. It's okay to not know. It's okay to not care. To a certain extent, especially just the home user. If you trust Apple and their new iCloud that they just announced recently, which was MobileMe before that and whatever, if you do trust them, and I'm not saying you shouldn't, then great. You probably don't want or need or care to know the details of how they do it behind the scenes if you trust that they're doing it right, if you trust that they're doing it securely, if you trust that they have your privacy in mind, if you do trust in this case, Apple, for those things, great. There's nothing wrong with that, no problem with that. But when you get to other types of cloud technologies or other companies, you have to handle it on a case-by-case basis. So there's certainly a lot of things that I do not know, but I absolutely trust you and what you guys have been doing with BinRev and what you've been doing with Hacker Public Radio. So, yes, I'm very knowledgeable about it, but I'm certainly no expert on it. So you and I had a long conversations for months of me grilling you and asking all kinds of questions and information to make sure I was comfortable where we're going, make sure it worked for us, make sure I was comfortable in the levels of security. And not only was I comfortable, I was pleasantly surprised. So point being, on every single case, you as a user have to make that decision of whether you trust the people running your cloud.
Exactly.
And this kind of is a good segue into a couple of I don't know, political topics, I guess, that you'd say. I'm going to bring these up, even though I got to tell you, this first one to me is just silly, but I've heard it said before. Somebody said this to my face, that cloud computing was evil. Just a generic statement like that, that it's this horrible, evil technology that's destroying jobs and destroying data centers, destroying IT professionals. And they were serious about it, and I'm not sure that I'm trying to be devil's advocate and see both sides and kind of put up, I'm not sure I see that. Have you ever heard that before?
I've heard it. But people need to understand this. I think you said it best. Technology is neither inherently good or evil. It just is. It exists. What you use it for, ultimately, is going to determine its purpose. Realistically, IT professionals need to stop fearing it and start looking at it as a tool. Because cloud is great, it's awesome, but it's not going to replace every single option out there. There are definitely some use cases where you need to have a completely physical server, completely physically contained in a location that you don't want all the other equipment that goes into making the cloud or the other network access that requires for the cloud to work. So keep in mind, cloud is not the end-all, do-all solution, but it does help make your job easier. It helps cut costs on a lot of things. Instead of having a bunch of legacy hardware sitting around on the shelf, you can get a newer system, virtualize that legacy hardware, put it into a storage system that is maintained a little bit better, and now you've got a virtualized environment of the old system sitting on whatever hypervisor you choose. The storage has now been updated to a point where you don't have to worry about disk failure. And if you need to expand your resources on that system, you don't have to worry about, oh crap, I don't have memory for this system anymore because it's 20 years old.
Right. Yeah, that's a good point. And if anything, it probably extends the longevity of this equipment because when it dies out, if you can't replace it anymore, okay, time to upgrade to a new one. It's invisible to the users. You've milked your old hardware as long as you could and taken advantage of it. So you've actually extended the longevity of what you had before as opposed to you know, after it's 10, 12 years old, and your client or whoever was using that hardware, whoever you were leasing it to or whatever, leaves, you're stuck trying to sell that and get someone else to buy or use or lease service, get pay for services from a 12-year-old system, which is awfully hard to do. Everybody wants the latest and greatest.
Right.
With the cloud, you can kind of combine all those together. Obviously, that's your mileage may vary on those type of things. So, but I mean, yeah, you and I think you referred to something we talked about before we started the show, and that is, you know, hackers have traditionally always believed that technology is inherently neutral. It is inherently neither good nor evil. So anybody who would say something like a technology is evil in this world, well, no, it's has to be applied just like everything else. And you mentioned by applying this, there's a whole lot of positivity, a whole lot of good ways it can be used. And I think we've seen in the news recently some bad ways it can be used, that, you know, people have been using cloud and leasing out bandwidth and stuff like that for DOS attacks and other things that have been in the news. So it's about how it's used. And technology in and of itself is ridiculous. Look at peer-to-peer. You know, that's been called evil, but my God, it's got so many wonderful, fantastic uses that you can't just label any technology that way. So one of the other things that I've seen brought up, and I'm not sure how I feel. I'm actually curious what you'd say to this. Right now, if any, let's say a site, because I can't think of a better way to illustrate this, a site or a company has all their information in a cloud. Let's say they have all their stuff on one private cloud or one cloud they're getting from anywhere in the world. Let's say Wikipedia, for example. And I don't know how they're set up. I'm not claiming anything for them. I'm just making up an example. What if a site, and let's say Wikipedia, because everybody listening knows that, decided that, you know what, we're going to shut down and lock down our cloud. I mean, they have the potential to say, you know what, we have decided that we're only going to make Wikipedia available to the United States and Canada or something like that, and just start blocking other countries. I mean, do we have a dangerous setup because of the cloud that everything is easier contained and therefore easier to jail off from the rest of the world or jail off from other countries or companies? Is it a valid danger, and is it a realistic danger? I think that's a two-part question. Is it valid, and is it, because I think technically it's possible, right?
Right, it definitely is possible, but it's no different than if it were a physical server. Volts and I were just kind of mumbling to ourselves here. It's no different than if you had a physical box and you said, you know what, I don't want trying to visit my sites anymore. They've been trying to hack me and DDoS me. Just like you would on a physical system, you can go off and say, I don't want this range of IP addresses accessing, or getting a ASA firewall or whatever brand firewall you want to get. You can set up firewall rules. There is no difference in the outward security. You can do it the exact same way with a physical server as you can with a virtual server. The only thing is, with a virtual server, now you, or a cloud server, you now enter into the realm of where you can have virtual firewalls, virtual enforcers that do that as well, and then leave other portions of it open. So say you have something that you can access here in the United States and it's perfectly legal, but say you've got information about encryption methods and things like that that it's illegal for people in a certain country to view, and you've gotten notice from that country is saying that they've caught people trying to view this information on your website, and they either want you to restrict their internet connectivity to that website or take it down. Now, personally, I don't want to get into a fight with another country. I don't have the means to go off and get into a legal battle with another country. So my solution would be simple enough: throw that portion of the site up on a virtual machine and put that enforcer only onto that virtual machine instead of doing it for the entire box.
Well, and I think that's, to simplify, I think what we're saying here is the cloud itself doesn't have anything to do with this topic. I mean, it makes it easier from an administrative standpoint to say, you know what, I'm blocking off the whole cloud and everything in it, instead of if you had, I don't know, 5, 10 servers scattered across the country sharing and serving it up in a traditional way, you could still block them off. It'd just be a little bit harder to do. The cloud makes it easier to administer that, but it doesn't change the fact that it's possible and exists and can happen just as easily without the cloud as it would with.
Correct.
So it's really a non-issue as far as the clouds. That's just a, you know, a different, bigger political issue that somebody can do an episode on separately, because that could go on. You could talk about that ad nauseum.
Yeah, Great Firewall of China. That in itself.
That's exactly what I'm thinking in my head. I didn't want to say it, but yeah, that's, you know, the firewall, they're choosing what to block out, but if everything was clouded, they could block an entire cloud, or you could withhold your entire cloud. I mean, there's a lot of options there, but I kind of like the way it is now. Let them censor what they want to censor. Not that I agree with it. I don't want to agree. I'm not saying that at all. I don't believe in censorship, but if that's what that country does, then that's something their people need to work out, and I don't think that's our fight to get involved in either.
Right.
But again, that's going off into a political discussion, so we'll rein back in on from that. Well, the other thing I think is kind of related to that is, you know, and I'm gonna let's segue a little bit into a little bit deeper here. We've kind of talked about these, but let's go into them analytically, and let's talk about some security issues and privacy issues that are brought up all the time when it comes to cloud computing. Let's address these directly and see what we can come up with on some of these. Is privacy a real threat, an enhanced threat in cloud computing versus traditional? A lot of things we've talked about, we've said, is no different. Cloud makes it easier to administer and set up and all that kind of stuff, but it's really the same overall concept. Well, have we opened up new privacy issues with the cloud, for example? And we might have to back up and define software as a service before we go down this road. But other people inside of our cloud, or other people that are sharing cloud together, is there an extra danger that because they're inside of the same cloud that they can have access to my data and vice versa?
In most cases, there's no, like, in a platform as a service or in this case, infrastructure as a service is what BinRev has with us. They're completely isolated. No VM, no user can access the other's data because it doesn't even know that that data is there. At that level, it's completely tied down to that user. The other users have no idea that that data is there, that another user's on the same. It's completely oblivious to it.
And that's a private cloud.
That's a private cloud or public cloud that's using just about every system out there that I'm aware of, unless they intentionally put this hole in there. Every hypervisor that I'm aware of out there restricts and prevents people from going off and seeing other data that's attached to a different VM or a different container, because they want to have that security there built into it. You can, and there are ways of getting around the security, mind you, and that's stuff you need to review. If you have that question, that is something you need to bring up with your provider. But even in our public cloud environment, we encrypt our customers' data, so I can't go off and just hijack their hard drive. I have to be forcing my way into their virtual environment in our cloud to get access to the data. I can't just go off and say, okay, I'm gonna just, oh, they've got something I like, I'm gonna just hijack it all. I'd have to get into the system, I'd have to compromise their system.
Well, wait a minute, now, to clarify, when you say I in this scenario, you're talking about you as an insider, as a system analyst, as somebody who has access, a system administrator. You, when you say I, that's the context you're talking about. Even on the inside, you would basically have to do something illegal, hack into, you don't have any extra access.
No, I don't have access to forcibly enter a customer's VM unless they provide us with their password, in which
right.
case that isn't hacking, that's entering with permission.
Right. So the danger of I guess an insider job is minimized because if you don't have you don't necessarily or require access all the time, right? These people can administer and do everything themselves without you having access.
Right. The only time it ever comes to be an issue is if there is a legal document placed at our in our hand saying, "Hey, we need to find out what's going on here."
Right.
And in which case, then we are, according to terms of service, and this is the case with just about every host, if you're doing something illegal
right.
and they get a report about it, they are legally obligated to go off and investigate it.
What if somebody else in the cloud, another site, is doing something illegal, serving up illegal porn of some kind? I'm in the same cloud. Is my data at risk?
No, because you are completely isolated. Your entire entity of your virtual environment is stored in a system that your data is encrypted, separate from his.
Okay, so if somebody hacked into that site and got complete root level access, is my data and my sites in danger?
No, because even at root level compromise for that virtual machine, it still is completely oblivious to every other system that's in that cloud.
So they could go out and plaster their root name and password all over the place. The data is going to be confined to what they have access to and what they have pre-allocated.
Correct.
Now, okay, I'm going to, how about, and this is the other common thing we hear people bring up, let's say they gave out the root password. Let's just say they got hacked. Somebody has root access to that box.
Mm-hmm.
Are they now inside of the firewall, inside and bypassed a lot of your layers of security and protection, and they're now able to attack from inside of the cloud to other parts of the cloud? Sure, it may be encrypted, but haven't they bypassed some security in that? I mean, it seems like there's some security that can be bypassed by that. They're inside. But you're still telling me that there are several layers of security after that that they still have to overcome.
Correct. Depending on the hypervisors, security levels are a little bit different. I can tell you, having worked with some of them, there are applications out for like Microsoft Hyper-V that actually monitor traffic between virtual machines. And so if you're using Hyper-V, that tool would actually be able to tell you, hey, wait a second, this guy's traffic's changed and it's now attempting attacks on Stink Dog's VM. We should investigate this, or we should disable it, or do whatever to ensure the safety of our system. So that's the human element, but on top of that, there's also the virtual environments involved. And we keep going, when we're talking about security, a lot of it resides in with the hypervisor and with the virtual environments that you're using. Storages have additional functions and things like that, but inherently they're not the most secure point, so you build security around those. Our storages are entirely on a network that cannot be reached from the outside world. You'd have to have physical access or have access to the private network via a VPN and multiple other layers of security I'm not going to get into, just because I don't want to give away too many trade secrets on that. But
again, that's kind of what I'm saying. If somebody did root their way in and got past the first part, they kind of are on an internal network.
Right, but then there's a separate network from that entirely.
Okay, gotcha.
So they've gotten in on the public network, public-facing network. Okay, you know what, crap. Now they can DOS attack behind the firewall that we have in place. But there's also a limit of how much traffic in our environment that we have set up for you guys. I can see exactly how many kilobytes per second are being used and how much memory, everything. I can even see what processes are running, what cores are being utilized, and tell you what's out of norm for any VM.
Right, and I think this is probably a good point to step back, because we've made a reference to this several times. We know what a hypervisor is, but for the listeners, I mean, am I oversimplifying a hypervisor to say that it is the the host operating system, or it's the system that handles the cloud, handles the technology. It's the underlying operating system, not... I'm going to stop trying to say it. I'll let you explain it.
Hypervisor is the virtualization layer. I mean, that's the easiest way to explain it. It's the virtualization layer. It takes the physical hardware of the node and presents it to the individual virtual machines or containers, depending, again, what technology you're using, and acts as that intermediary. So different hypervisors perform differently and allow for different control, for different utilization, different operating systems, just various things in there. So your hypervisor should be a selection based on what your needs are.
All right, so then I guess I think better illustrating this. So if you were to, let's say that BinRev continued to grow and we needed an extra 2 gigs of memory, you've already got it hardware-wise behind the scenes. You would have to go into the hypervisor, into that software layer, into that virtualization layer, and say, allocate 2 more gigs of memory to this client or this account.
Correct.
It does that sort of thing, more hard drive space, or adding scripts, adding monitoring, things like that behind the scenes.
Right.
Or also, obviously, creating new accounts, creating new virtualizations, new virtual machines, etc.
Exactly.
Okay. All right, so that kind of makes sense to me, helps me understand it. I guess then, based on everything we've just said there and talking about privacy, I don't see... Obviously, there's a lot of other layers of security in there. Are there standards? Are there minimum requirements that people have? I mean, you said that your network storage is on a whole separate network. Is that common, or is that something that only you guys do because you are very secure and take this seriously? And do all of the cloud providers do that? Is that a standard? Is it a case by case, like you said earlier? Do your homework and trust the people you're working with.
It really becomes a case by case. I've worked with multiple providers. When we were building out our cloud initially, I looked at some of our other competitors, looked at some of the other people that were doing it already. I saw things that I liked, and I saw things that I didn't like. And the things that I didn't like, I intentionally built things differently. Things that I liked, I tried to model after. I can say for a fact that there are some out there that your private data goes over public networks, and that's a scary thought to me.
Yeah.
I'm not going to name names. I don't want to get anybody in trouble, but I've come across some providers that do that. Some providers don't even use network-based storage. It's all direct attached, so it becomes an issue of, okay, if that server fails, now you lost some of your redundancy. You have to do a restore to get that data back.
So all clouds are not created equal.
Correct.
So I guess I want to be careful here because we kind of debunked some myths earlier. We talked about, you know, this isn't such a huge worry. This isn't such a big deal. This is no different than traditional. But to be clear, what it comes down to is cloud computing is not necessarily any more vulnerable, but it is, just like any other scenario, a case-by-case basis. You have to trust and know the people you're doing business with. So some fly-by-night people that are offering cloud technology, you cannot assume that your data is private. You can't assume that it's encrypted. You can't assume that if somebody rooted one of the other boxes, they would not easily have access, because it all depends on how they've implemented all of those layers and levels of security.
Exactly.
So do your homework. Can cloud computing have a lot of security problems? Absolutely. Privacy, absolutely. But I think I could safely say, I feel comfortable saying most of the time it's secure, but you have to check and make sure the people do it. And you know what? If you're looking for hosting, forget about cloud. If you're just going out to find a regular host, you're in the same boat. You need to find, if you're going to use some fly-by-night, there's been somebody spamming our forums over at BinRev.com, over at the forums, for some off-site, out-of-country hosting, and they don't provide a domain name, they don't provide a phone number to contact them, they have no references, no anything. Yeah, I'm not going to do business with you or trust you to take care of my data or any of that kind of stuff. Those same rules apply in cloud computing, as I guess what the some what the moral of the story is.
I would agree.
All right, well, there are a couple other privacy things I want to talk about before we move on, and I think I said we might really want to back up and talk about software as a service, or SaaS, which is another buzzword you hear a lot these days, because it's kind of related to cloud computing the same way we talked about earlier. It's not so much that you are paying for system and hosting and memory and stuff like that. It's more that you are allowing the, I'm not sure what the proper term is, the host or the cloud computing company that you're dealing with to run the software on their machines in their private cloud. And I think the biggest example of this, a success story of this, is a company called ServiceNow, which is a help desk type company, is a ticketing system.
Right.
And what they do is they have all of their system running on their servers in their cloud.
Salesforce.
And I don't know the specs of all their stuff. I'm sorry?
Salesforce is a big one too.
Yeah, Salesforce is another huge one. Absolutely good one. We don't know what their clouds are. I don't know if they publish that specs. I just don't know it offhand. Maybe they post some of that information. But they're not really selling you hosting services or a private cloud for you to host your websites like we've kind of been talking about with us. They're offering you software as a service, or SaaS, meaning you pay them a monthly fee and you get access to their software that they maintain, they run it, they handle the security, the underlying system administration, and all take that headache off of you, so you can just use the application remotely. Kind of like Google Apps, or I think Microsoft Office works remotely now. You're just using the front end, usually through a web browser, not necessarily, but usually through a web browser, to use their software, and they're handling all the processing and all the work on the back end of it. That is commonly tied to the cloud because, like I said, they're running the cloud on the back end, and if they can, I think this is where we get to some of the benefits you mentioned earlier about, and I think we want to go into some more detail, and that is about utilization. We all know that websites spike at different times of the day. We know that sites get slash dotted and traffic may increase or decrease depending on what's going on. Well, by combining all these together, you won't have as much wasted CPU cycles, as much wasted memory, because you're all sharing it and you can monitor it more closely and see where it's going. And if somebody has some downtime and is not using as much memory or hard drive space or whatever the case may be, someone else can, because it's available and you're sharing, you're working together, and you can all get better efficiency and utilization from your system. Is that correct?
Yeah. It's beneficial for people who are in a cloud environment who have that occasional burst, they get slash dotted, whatnot. It becomes the ability for them to not only scale a single VM, but have the ability in a lot of cases to clone and do load balancing and things that are normally something that would take weeks to do, or at least a few hours. We have a couple of our customers that I can bring up a new virtual machine if they get really hammered and have it up and running within a few minutes, have a fleet of 10 of them up within probably 45 minutes, and add that into their load balancer, and all of a sudden their site's now running across 20 virtual machines with 4 cores each, 6 gigs of RAM. I mean, and these are virtual machines that weren't there prior to them getting slash dotted.
And there's no, it's not at the cost to anybody else in that cloud or anybody else. You're not at the mercy of using those resources and causing harm or slowing someone else down like it is in traditional hosting.
Right, exactly. So you take out some of the administration time that comes with having to sync up the data, get everything configured to get the server up and running, and then you have the advantage of they're only getting billed for the time that they have those. If they don't already have that hardware up and running, if they don't have that extra space there, they're only paying for the time that they burst over their allotment. So now you're not getting this, oh, I've got this huge amount of bill because I get slashed twice a month. They're only paying for the amount of resources that they use.
And in a traditional hosting environment, like another thing is, even if you're not billed for bandwidth or something like that, like I had a friend who was booted from some shared hosting companies simply because he would have spikes in a database. Somebody would make a big query to the database or a bunch of small queries and overload it. Well, you're overloading the SQL, the MySQL server, and that's actually the entire box suffers from that load. So you're slowing down all the other customers that are on there. So I've had friends that got shut down and kicked off for doing that because, well, and nowadays I think they found ways to throttle that stuff a lot more. But if you go over a certain amount, you're actually causing harm to other people that you're using on that same physical box.
Correct.
So that, again, is another benefit. So.
And that's where platform as a service has become really popular, too. Platform as a service provides like MySQL, PHP, Ruby is a real common one actually for platform as a service. Renduku, I think, or one of those guys, they're huge. Salesforce actually bought one. So they actually do platform as a service now too, not just software as a service. But those types of things for people who are having this issue of, well, I'm using more resources, I'm causing these people to go down. Now they can go off and say, okay, I want to pay only up to this amount of CPU, memory, process time, queries, whatever you want to do. It becomes a little bit easier for people to manage, and they don't get this lovely little notice in the mail saying, you've used too much resources. We've been forced to suspend your account because of this.
Right. Well, and it also, and let's tie it back, because we were talking about software as a service and Salesforce and ServiceNow and other similar things. Not only are they selling the software, we're explaining why it's in their best interest because it's much more efficient for them to run a local cloud like that and let them deal with it so that to you as a user, you don't care about those sort of things. But what it allows them to do is not only to charge you a monthly fee or whatever contract for the software, which, you know, that could be who knows what, but also, if you need more, you can add more. That pay-as-you-go, that a la carte system. Where if you need more bandwidth 1 month, maybe you're expecting a lot more sales. I don't know who's Salesforce, but you're expecting a lot more bandwidth. Or you're going to be using a lot more disk space because you're going to be uploading a bunch of stuff. Whatever the case may be, they have that flexibility to do that for you, charge you on a case-by-case basis for it. So they can kind of gauge for, I don't know if I'd say the platform as a service, but sort of they can kind of merge the two together. Charge it for software licensing fees and how much disk space or resources you need. So that's kind of an interesting scenario.
Yeah, they definitely have a very interesting model. It becomes one that you start wondering about the security on those things, and I think you mentioned that earlier with them, like who ends up owning the data when they're in a system like that.
Right. And that's actually exactly what I was going to segue next. I mean, we talked about the privacy aspects of can another user inside of a cloud get access to your data? Well, the reason I wanted to bring up software as a service at that point is for this exact reason. In the scenario you described it with platform as a service, one VM separate from another, you guys have your storage sectioned off somewhere completely different. Sounds like the steps are there to protect that. But in a software as a service, you're at the mercy of the software, not the platform, the software itself. So how do they implement security? Obviously, we can't speak to this, so we're just thinking out loud here. But, you know, I don't think we can speak to whether that's safe or unsafe without knowing a lot more detail. Do they encrypt the traffic? Are they sharing the same database? Is it just different tables? Are they using fine-grained access control and sharing the same database for crying out loud? I mean, there's a whole lot of questions.
There's a lot of questions on that. And especially with all the hacks that we've been seeing lately, you'd like to think that a company as large as Salesforce or as large as ServiceNow or any of those guys would have these fine-grained controls and use separate databases for each user and things like that. But you look at the recent hacks, like with Sony. Sony was an epic fail to me. The fact that they had that much data compromised and they didn't mention anything until, you know, they kind of got caught with their hand in the jar. And another one would be Citibank, another really bad one in my mind. These are companies that are huge. Like, you would think they'd have a full-time security team there. And from what I hear, Sony actually fired their security team prior to this whole mess happening. So it just, you got to be really careful who you trust your data with.
Yeah, for those who listen to me for years and years, I would simply say that Sony has been complete and utter epic fail as a company since the inception of the company. But that's a whole different topic altogether. And I gotta say, I'm probably crossing a line in the politics here and going somewhere I shouldn't, but I think Sony's paying for GeoHot. That's what you get for fucking with GeoHot. But anyway, I digress. Privacy and the software as a service aspect. There's too many questions for us to go into that or talk about, but I think one question that maybe we can kind of talk about between us, just opinion here, is, are there some things that should not go in the cloud? I mean, yeah, cloud's got a lot of good things going for it. It's good technology, good efficiency, easier to maintain, administer, all these positive things, but it doesn't make it the solution for everything. I'm not sure what I would. Am I comfortable with putting my websites and stuff shared out in the cloud? Sure, no problem. Would I want, let's go back to Apple. Apple in their iCloud, you can put all your contact information, your photos are shared up in there, your music. I guess music I wouldn't care too much about, but do I want my family's phone numbers and birth dates and stuff like that in a cloud? I mean, I'd have to be pretty damn confident and comfortable with it.
Yeah, well, Google was trying to do a medical cloud. And that scared the living daylights out of me. They were like, oh, well, we'll put your medical data in our servers. And I'm just thinking to myself, you got to be crazy. I'm not letting you guys have a database of all my, you know, ailments or allergies. Things that come up in my mind are, you know, the movie Antitrust, where they've got this massive database about all these programmers and what they're allergic to and different things like that. Scares me. I may be paranoid, but it does scare me.
Oh, no, that's a little Skynet for me, too. I mean, it's exactly what I was thinking. I'm glad you said it because, yeah, I get labeled a conspiracy. You know, Google already has a little bit too much of my data, I think. I try to minimize how much I give them. But, yeah, the idea of the medical data, I did not like that at all. I don't want any part of that. Financial, I don't think I'd ever put my bank records. I don't even like, for example, I've kind of been putting a little bit of time lately into trying to go back and fill in some gaps in my family tree that I've had for years, haven't touched. I brought it back up and was trying to fill in some stuff. And in doing so, in doing some research, I see all these people that have shared their family trees out there on the interwebs. It's just a general bad idea for privacy to me, cloud or otherwise. So there are certain things I don't want online, therefore not in the cloud. So I think, I guess, each individual person has to make that decision themselves. I mean, Volts, are you with me on this one, or am I alone here?
No, I agree with you. I mean, I can't really disagree with you in a sense of saying, you know, having everything shared. I mean, you know, like you said, having, you know, your family's contacts in there, well, that's basically the same, you know, one precaution you might want to have is, say, if you have your family's phone numbers in your phone, you might not want to even say, you know, hey, this is my home phone number, because somebody finds out your home phone number, finds out more information. I mean, just a little bit of digging can get you anywhere.
Right. Well, and Josh here knows that I can't stand when I call him and I get that damn Google voice I don't like the fact that Google has my number logged in there, and who knows what they're doing with that or what they're joining to other databases. So phone number is definitely out, personal family information. I don't mind that my sex tape was out there being shared. That's fine. Oh, you both have seen it, I can tell. So that, all right, so that's, again, everybody's going to have to make their own decision on how far they want to go with that. But, again, for my aspect, I just think the cloud is great technology for the way we're using it. It's tremendously helpful, cost-effective, easier to maintain. So from a I guess, platform as a service, from us just having all our hosting done that way, it gives us a lot of flexibility. We talked about who owns data already, and that's, again, case-by-case basis with software as a service. Just kind of looking at a couple notes I have here, I want to make sure I covered any questions or anything that I've heard brought up. And I guess this is just all we can do about this is think out loud, too, is with these software as a service companies, if you do use them for a year, 2 years, 5 years, and you put your data or information out there, let's say iCloud, on a personal example, or ServiceNow or something in a professional environment, what do you do after a year when your contract is up? Do they have your data hostage? Is iCloud going to, what are they going to do with the data if I don't renew it? Do I get to at least download it back to my laptop or my iPhone or whatever the case may be, or are they holding it hostage? That's a realistic danger, isn't it?
Well, in the case of iCloud, it's actually closer to Dropbox, where it's syncing your data. It sure keeps some of your data in the cloud, but it's syncing it to multiple devices. That was kind of one of the major focuses with iCloud, was it wasn't strictly like the Google Music streaming service, where once I put my music up there, I can't pull it back down. So if I were to put my entire music library up there, which, mind you, I think it quoted it out for like a week, to put all my music up there, I wasn't too thrilled about that. But we're looking at the ability to have your data synced across multiple devices with Apple's iCloud versus another service like Google Music, where that data is up there and who knows what's going to happen to it after you say, well, I'm done with that, I didn't like it, I want my music back. In the case for like ServiceNow, I don't know how they get you your data.
Or if they can. I mean, what if a competitor comes up and you decide to switch? I mean, you gotta read the fine print. They might have some fee in there that says that, yeah, you can get it, but it costs you $10,000 buyout or something ridiculous. I don't know. But these are, again, I'm just throwing out questions that people should ask themselves when it comes to these things. Think. When it comes to cloud computing, these are thoughts you need to address and think about up front before you go committing to the clouds or the software as a service, that type of cloud anyway.
Yeah, cloud services.
Who owns that data? I mean, there were some, wasn't there some controversy with, was it Facebook or was it LiveJournal? It was one of those sites that tried to make the claim that anything that you typed and uploaded became their intellectual property.
That's Facebook.
That what? Yeah. I mean, are you kidding me?
They can now, if you don't tell them no, they can use your pictures for any ads. So if you have pictures up there, if you didn't go in on the, well, you can still do it, but like on the day that they announced that option was in there, I logged in and checked the box saying, don't use my photos for ads or anything. But Facebook is the one that was going off and saying, well, you put it here, it's ours.
Yeah, that wasn't that way all along, right? Isn't it something they tried to change the terms of service ongoing? I mean,
right.
Was it also another Facebook controversy where they just decided to take out the privacy? Like, wasn't there a way you could, I don't have Facebook, so forgive me here. Wasn't there a way that they marked it so that you had your account set to private, and then they just one day changed it and said, nope, everybody's now public, and you can't set it to private anymore.
Yeah, they did that and then got in big trouble for it, too.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Like, you, suddenly, you could have been private, you could have followed the rules, you could have done it, and they just changed their mind in midstream. I mean, that's a huge blow to their credibility and trust level to me. I would never try, and I don't trust Facebook, that's why I don't have an account. They can just change the terms of service at will. Google did the same thing to me with their AdWords and AdSense. Granted, they didn't like me anyway after presenting at DEF CON about that topic, but even so, while I was playing with it, they would change the terms of service all the time and say, you have to accept these new terms of service to continue. You had no choice in the matter.
Right.
So, I mean, they can change the rule book as the game is playing, and that's just a little bit wrong to me. So you got to be careful and read all the fine print, the warnings, and every one of these scenarios.
Right, and that's ultimately you have to go based on what you're comfortable with. A lot of people, you know what, they don't care. And it's kind of bit them on the hind end. We could do an entire segment about Facebook and some of the stuff that they've done and how it's impacted people's lives. One girl got fired over a comment she posted on Facebook about her boss.
I'm sure there's been plenty of stories like that.
But just to plug an open source project that I think should get a lot more notice, Diaspora. Have you heard of that one?
Yeah, I think so.
It's a open source social network that you control what is shared and what isn't, and with whom you want to share it with.
Right.
And you host it on your own system. It's really cool. It's an alpha phase.
Now I remember, yes.
So I look forward to seeing more from things like that. Not necessarily them, but I think that's probably the furthest one along so far.
Well, that's probably a different show. Let's not go too far off. Although, if anybody who's related to that project would like to come on an episode, I would love to hear that. So if anybody's involved in that project, please do an HBR episode and listen to it. But to bring it back, let's wrap up with a couple of... I think we've kind of hit around them here and there as they came up, but let's kind of wrap up and talk about some of the big benefits going to a private cloud, such as we have done with BinRev. We have moved all of BinRev into a private cloud, which, without going into details of the hardware behind it, let's just say we have plenty of hardware, and because of the nature of the cloud, we have the ability to upgrade it, increase it as needed, at whenever we want to, however we want to. We have that flexibility. So there's that. There's obviously, from my standpoint, I'm gonna make a clear delineation here. I'm gonna refer to you as the system administrator. You and I kind of share that responsibility, although you're 90% of it easily. So I'm gonna think of you as the system administrator, the service provider. I'm gonna think of myself simply as the webmaster in this scenario. So from my standpoint, I don't have to worry about uptime or system maintenance anymore. That's your job.
Right.
So that's a huge benefit. I have been using, as BinRev grew and grew over the years, it got to the point where I've said many times, I'm not a sysadmin. I can fumble my way through and I can get the job done, but not as well as somebody who knows it. So we got to a point where we grew too big and I had to say, you know what, it's time for me to have to pay the extra money to get hosted services. But traditional hosted services simply meant I lease a box from a hosting company with whatever specs that we agree on. Those specs aren't dynamic. If I outgrow the box, we have to get another box, pay the difference, pay the money to increase, do the migration and move over to said box. It's a nightmare. And we've done that over the years. Managed hosting simply meant I paid extra to have somebody answer tickets and fix the box when it's broken. With the cloud, with the way we're set up now, we have one system to maintain. And when I say we, I mean you.
Yeah.
You know, it may be multiple physical boxes, but it's one hypervisor, I guess, and all the VMs inside of it.
Right.
So that also means I don't have to worry about backups and disaster recovery. That's your baby to deal with too.
Yep.
And backups and stuff like that, from a webmaster standpoint, I can do them just because I'm paranoid and like redundancy, but you guys can take care of that. You can back that up to the NAS servers, take snapshots every, I think you were telling me that not all VMs, not all hypervisors have this capacity, but some do, where they'll take snapshots and just store the deltas so that it's quicker and easier to restore in case of problems.
Exactly. That's what we run with you guys. Just an automatic system that goes off, okay, it's that magic time, make a snapshot, just take the deltas. I think a snapshot on average takes about a minute and a half. Depending on what changes, it could take as much as 2.5 minutes. But to have a backup that I can restore and push you guys back to that state at that exact moment, it's well worth, you know, the minute where it's doing that.
Yeah, and all of those things that I just talked about are the main reasons that I looked into making this switch and making this change. But the other one that surprised me, and I can't believe I didn't realize how awesome this was until you and I talked about it. The context was about consolidating mail service, but the point that I was getting at is these are all now virtual machines, and you can split them up or share them any way you want to. I know we have some dedicated to a certain site or two for the big ones, and other ones we still shared on a virtual machine. But I can start to create as many virtual machines as I want inside of that private cloud. So I can finally, I used to register silly domain names and stuff as sandboxes just to play in and just to hack away at and install CMSs and just, you know, write code and teach myself and learn stuff. Will Hack for Food was one of our funniest ones. I registered that as a joke. We used that as a project to make a disposable email system, and it worked, and it stuck, and we kept it. Well, with this new environment, not only can I create VMs on demand to test in and to play in and to have a sandbox, they won't destroy or hurt anything. I'm not going to misconfigure anything or take another site down because I screwed up MySQL or PHP or anything like that. But I can put any OS in there that I want.
Right.
It's going to run a Windows 7 server. I don't know what Windows 7. I don't use Windows 7. I can run a Windows environment next to a Ubuntu, next to a Red Hat, next to a Debian, next to a Slackware. All I got to do is create the VM image for it, and I can have anything I want inside of this cloud.
Right.
I don't have to have a separate box.
Nope, and that's one of the things that a lot of people, they don't think about, because, and Volts will go off and say, I've said this a million times before, but every operating system out there has its purpose, has a function. It wouldn't exist, it wouldn't be a living, breathing project if it didn't have a function. I know some people argue, I know Latera thinks BSD is the only way to go. But, I mean, there's a function for just about every OS out there. If there wasn't, it wouldn't still be a living project. So,
software that only works on certain OSs and stuff, too. So that's another factor. If there's something you need that's only made for one OS, it sucks, but it's a reality.
Yes, it is.
I know there's a story there. We'll leave that alone. So we could put up a box dedicated to Counter-Strike, or I don't know, what's the game of the day? I heard Duke Nukem 3D got horrible reviews, so.
Yeah.
That one.
Was it?
That's the funny thing, is that I wasn't thinking about that. I was just thinking of ease of use, easing my burden, easing the load, the workload on me. I wasn't looking at gaining benefits, and when I found out that I could have and create other VMs and fairly easily and run them alongside, still in the same security infrastructure, still sharing the same resources, that just made me so happy that I kind of, since we've done that, and you know this, we've started getting back into hacking, to be honest. I've been kind of retired, and I still some I am. I'm actually finding time again now that my burden has been lifted with administrative duties. And I have to say it's thanks to the cloud, but also thanks to you guys personally at Lunar Pages. You guys have done humongous things, just tremendous workload lifted off of me, which I appreciate. I'm actually able to get back into doing things. I've been talking to NotTheory for the past week or two, and we got a couple projects that we are going to work on again. We're going to throw some VMs up, and we're going to start hacksawing again. That's a great feeling. I finally can do that, and I really feel like I have that ability because of the cloud.
And the nice thing is if you guys do compromise and completely destroy the virtual machine, you guys can have that snapshot. Okay, let's look back. We maintain the one that you guys compromised, turn that into a data mining system, and we bring up another system that's identical to it before it got compromised.
Well, and you know, there's another little thing too that we've never had the luxury of. It's probably minor, but it's more professional to do this. Our forum software, which is Envision Board, great piece of software, but every time a patch or an update comes out, we've kind of had to do it in line. We've had to do the update right there on a live machine, which is obviously dangerous. Now, it's pretty much always worked. We've had a few bugs here and there, and I'd have to sit down and work through them.
Yeah, Volts is here shaking his head.
I'm sorry?
Volts is over here shaking his head.
I guess he doesn't like Envision.
He likes it.
I like Envision. I go more with vBulletin, even though it's usually a resource hog, but I've had quite my share of problems with Envision and having the inline going in there for patches.
Yeah, and that's, you know, what we did is we did a whole separate installation under a different account, and anytime we'd have to do one of those, we would try to do it in the other account and test it there, see if it worked. But every time we do that, we'd have to clone over the database, copy over the tree, all that kind of stuff. It's just a lot of work. Now, in this new environment, whether it's Envision, vBulletin, or any of the numerous boards that are out there, you can simply clone over your live system and just upgrade it and install it from there. If it works, great. You go do it on your live box. If it doesn't, you have the luxury of taking your time to figure out what went wrong, et cetera, et cetera. So that was another unexpected, pleasant surprise that I had out of this. So we can take a snapshot of anyone needs at any time and fire it up as a new VM. So we don't even have to have an image to build from. I don't have to go through an install process. I clone one that's already working. You know, it's like ghost imaging. They do that at most big companies now. They're not installing everything every time. They take an image of one machine and they blow it out to thousands. It's the same thing. We take an image of what we want, and we can blow it out quickly and be up and running. I mean, technology is wonderful. Yeah. I have such a weird boner right now.
That was a little bit too much there.
On that note, I think that's a good way to wrap up the show. Let's see. I think we've talked about everything I wanted to bring up. I mean, again, I can't speak highly enough of the cloud. If it's done well, done properly, and you understand what's going on with it. To reiterate, you have to know and ask the right questions, and hopefully on this episode of the show we've given you a lot of those questions, a lot of things to think about. Write them down, listen to the show again if you have to, and if you're looking for cloud computing, go to your provider, go to the company you're considering, and ask these questions, and make sure you understand what you're getting into, and it will hopefully make life a lot easier for you. Or, you know, you're probably going to hear at the end of this episode, we finally have a new outro recorded that we're going to put in the end of every show. And as that will say, I'll say now, go to the guys here at Lunar Pages. They will do the job right. They have done a great job by us, and I cannot endorse them any more than I do. I think they've done great work with us, and I am very satisfied with them. Obviously, I'm biased, so just ask the right questions of whoever or wherever you do go. And I don't know, guys, is there anything else you guys want to bring up? Anything I missed, overstated, understated?
I think you hit the nail on the head. I mean, it's been a pretty good journey through what cloud is. I just hope people, if they have questions, feel free to hit us up, because this is what I do all day. My official title with the company is Cloud Specialist, so...
Actually, you've written a lot of the custom, I mean, you've written the system almost, right?
A lot of the underlying scripts. I didn't write the hypervisor, but scripts that make use of the hypervisor, of the storage, of the backup stuff, that was all stuff that I had built together.
So they can come to hackerpublicradio.org, of course, is the site, and you can find just about any contact information there. You can also go to binrev.com. In the forums there, there is a forums thread for every episode of Hacker Public Radio. When this gets added to the feed, there is a thread created in the Hacker Media Forum, and you are more than welcome to go there and post any questions or any follow-ups, any corrections, if I misspoke. Anything like that, you can head over to binrev.com and post it there, and we will do our best to get back to you. And I think that is it. So, Josh, Volz, thank you both very much for being on the show with me. And I think we've already talked about some ideas for future episodes, so we will hopefully be hearing from you guys again very soon.
Absolutely. Excellent.
All right. Thanks, everybody, and thanks for listening to Hacker Public Radio.
Thank you.
Thank you.
You have been listening to Hacker Public Radio, and we hope you enjoyed the episode. Hacker Public Radio is a community project by hackers, for hackers, from the binary revolution at binrev.com. HPR and all BinRev projects are proudly sponsored by Lunar Pages. From shared hosting to custom private clouds, go to lunarpages.com for all of your hosting needs. Thanks for listening, and we look forward to your contribution.
Thank you for listening to Hacker Public Radio. For more information on the show and how to contribute your own shows, visit hackerpublicradio.org.